I'm reminded of Prabhupada saying the caravans and the dogs will caravan will pass. So outside there's a passing caravan complete with elephants and drums.
Demigods.
I don't know what's going on, but they're passing. When I first arrived in Montreal, Hemavati came up to me and she said, "Your initiation." And I said, "What is that?" She says, "You have more mantras to chant." She said, "And then you can worship the deity." But when worshiping the deity, so I was like a little, because since I was already washing the deity, I was having enough trouble chanting 16 rounds. I thought, well, I need to chant more mantras. But it was a wonderful initiation. And Umapati Maharaj, who was Umapati Dasadikari at the time, or maybe he was Brahmachari at the time. So Umapati, our second initiation, and then many of you know Rukmini, the wife of Anuttama, stated at that time, and two also, and Sarai also got her second. So this initiation ceremony went on. During the preparation, which was in India you wouldn't think it's so small, but I mean it was this couch here. It was really one sink of little four, and one or two by two, we'd all go in there to make something to offer to the Lord for Janmashtami. And Srila Prabhupada also in to make an offering for the Lord. So we were all into this kitchen takes along with this divine grace Srila Prabhupada cooking for Krishna. The next day, for Hija, which was the first time, say, we had a puja. So this was 1988 August. The movement was now a little running into its second year. Actually, to backtrack, in 1966, July, I remember Kunda came to our apartment with a letter, and he said, "The papers of incorporation have arrived. And it opened with incorporation documents, which as hippies, we were just not used to dealing with the legalities. We were used to avoiding the legalities. So suddenly we were becoming an organization, National Society for Krishna Consciousness, with two big chapters, one in New York, a little storefront painted white, and one in San Francisco, another little storefront painted white, and international. And I was thinking, oh my God, I hope we don't become like the Catholic Church. This big conglomerate. And then short Montreal Center established. So that, because Montreal is not in America, it's in Canada. So then we actually truly became international. And of course, when we went by going to England, that was when the mark or the international part. We had just a very short few days. And as Shamsundar Prabhupada was giving on how to behave, how to bring consciousness, and in particular he was instructing Mukunda, who was the most deeply minded among us, and Kirtan, and Harinam. And then, after these two auspicious ceremonies, Sri Janmashtami's Via, actually won the feast of Vyasa Puj, they put such a large plate, two people had to carry it in. And he picked off Lubjaman and he bit in, just was squirting out, hugged me up, and he handed him, because I was at that point sitting right in front of him for those few years, no matter what, I would sit in front of him, this may be the last time I see him for who knows when. So he held me up and he handed me this Lubjaman, and he indicated it was for a baby. So, totally pre-conditioning, oh, but, you know, little baby, it's only supposed to have milk. And then my mind kind of quick shifted, and wait a minute, this is from the lips of Puti, and I put it to her mouth, and just immediately started sucking all of that Lubjaman that Srila bitten from. And during that day, he was giving a lecture. And in the lecture, he said, Krishna, Vishnu, but to love Krishna, we had to love. And I got a little confused. Well, why, if Krishna is the supreme, if he's the topmost, why would Vishnu? And he explained that to me, and somehow it wasn't. Because when he asked your question, why would somebody worship Vishnu if Krishna is the best, if he's supreme? And somehow I wasn't getting it. And then he said, why do you love that child? And I didn't know what to say. He said, you love her. That's simply because this worship of Krishna, simply because you love, you know, someone will worship, simply because you love Vishnu. But he was pointing out the relationship with my daughter, the example. Now we knew in leaving the North continent and leaving Srila Prabhupada, would we ever see him again? We didn't know. And also entering into this mission, it's suddenly a very open thing. What's going to happen to us? How will we do this? We actually, you know, establish a Center for Krishna Consciousness in a place we've never been and so many things. But then I read that the blessings of the pure devotee, all obstacles are removed. And we had seen Indians come forward into Prabhupada's feet. That's the thing he encouraged and have done it. But what I'd also heard was by touching the feet of the pure devotee, 10,000 lifetimes of sinful activities are removed and anything is guaranteed. So I thought, we need all the help we can get. So I went to Govinda Dasi and I asked her, will you ask G can touch his feet? The part I didn't know, you touch his feet, but you're dumping your karma, and which was why, you know, Prabhupada, you know, when I understood that, you know, I felt sorry this quest, but at the same time, it was not for ourselves, it was to ensure the success of the mission of serving Sri the Prabhupada. And he agreed that we could do this. So on the day after the Pooj, the 6.5 of us came into the small room of his apartment to bid farewell. And there was, and he put his arm out, give him my daughter, holding her to his chest, but facing out. And he had a garland on. And he put the garland over both of them, just this. And actually, that's when he was, and Gurudas was taking, and he, that's when he said, the sannyas is this, because he was talking about God brothers, how they went. He said, my Guru Maharaj, he sent sannyas, but I'm sending grihastras. And already he'd been criticized, his God brothers hadn't seen anything, but they had heard, oh, there's boys and girls, there's this and no. So he was a little bit of criticism. He was holding my daughter with the garland around both of them, saying, yes, and now they will say what kind of sannyas is this. So it was time to go. And he had the little desk in front of him. And in a very shy way, but very graceful and aristocratic way, he put his lotus foot out. And one day we all came up, but we didn't really get our hands. We bowed down on his lotus feet. His lotus hand, and he rubbed each one of us on the back of our head, down by our neck. And when that, it was an incredible instant, because, you know, you're not going to get any spirit perfection by somebody zapping you to the forehead, or tapping you in the head. You know, you see these, do this kind of thing. So when Prabhupada rubbed us on the back of the head, it was like incredible sensation. It was light, it was warmth, it was love. It was absolutely guaranteed that this mission to London would be successful. At least that's what I felt.
Later, Prabhupada, in his sense of humor, related this at some gathering. There are a lot of people coming to Prabhupada and taking gifts, sitting right by his side, watching him. And he said, just see how they treat saintly persons. And then he said, believed that touches the feet of the guru, they give the guru all their karma. So the guru must be very, but why I pat people, I give it back to them.
So now we're in UK?
Yeah.
Okay.
But we didn't get directed to UK, so we got there. Yeah. Yeah. We get a red truck.
Oh, okay.
Because it was our Garuda for the time.
Right after Mount Gata, I realized that this is a huge material, and that in order to do our programs and places in this huge city, we needed transport. So we saw an advertisement in a tobacco store for an old 8 pickup truck. This is called, it was a small version of a 4 pickup truck with 4 cylinders. It's wooden spoke as a car. So, but it was only 65 pounds. So we bought this vehicle, which became our chariot for years in England. Wound up, that for the, not only London, but all over the British Isles for almost 3 years. These 4 guys in the back and, you know, Swati in the front, this tiny little
canopy. He built a canopy over the back because it was actually open. And he built this, like, canopy over the back. And they, I mean, he squished in the back. and people started to join the front, and they'd be squished in the back. It's just a little tiny thing.
You had to start it with a crank in the front, you know, like this. That's how old it was. Things I've ever seen in my It's Guru Das, I didn't know. Because the car had stopped, the truck had stopped somewhere in a blinding snowstorm. And Guru out there cranking this car to try to get it start. The handle of the crank, Dodi, and his Dodi came off. This, what really kept it as an effect is a constant sense. We had more fun performing this service for Srila Prabhupada than I've ever had in my life. There was a giant. Well, first, their accents were so funny. Anyways, and Mukunda, who's a great musician, was a very good mimic. And we would meet some character. We all did our own separate missions, meeting in the morning and get established who was going to do what that day. Sometimes we went together, but normally this or that. In the evening and adventures for the day and what characters we had met. We met some incredible characters, and Guru Das and Mukunda were very good at imitatorisms. Away from some very stuffy to some cockney kind of working man. And we just had much fun with these people that we started meeting. Man, family. Actually, throughout the 2 or 3 years of Krishna consciousness prior to arriving in England, we had not met any Indian people other than Pad. There were no states yet. The of many Indians to the USA is a recent phenomenon. In those days, you never saw somebody from India in USA.
Embassy.
Yeah, but in England, there were many Indians. And so we began to, because they, we realized in the weeks of being there that we were going to make an impression in that city dressed the way we were. Because up to that time, Prabhupada had never told us, shaved head, you should put on, wear robe, know what these things were. But we got the idea that if we're going to stand out in this giant city, they better look unique. So we hated to do it off our hair and these clothes that we were not familiar with, but we decided to do it. The girls, I don't know, they got some beds and colored them. We did on yellow, bright yellow color, because everybody can. And one by one, Guru Das was always the first one to do things because we'd push him out of the problem. Say, Guru Das, can you deal with this first, please? He's from New York, you know. New York guys are a little tougher than So, shaved his head. We looked at him. All right, we got to do it now, too. One by one, we couldn't deny it, shaved. And then we'd tie the dhoti. Somehow Rabbi Jamuna got some instruction from Indian host or something, but Guru was the first one to put on a dhoti. Actually, they figured it took a long time how to tie it. Although I didn't really know well, you know, the thing was hanging open. And people began to notice. We went in public. Then we became expert, a phenomenon in England. Now we finally, we changed our routine, we exist with these people, and spread Krishna consciousness. Our first group that we encountered were from India, people living in England. They began to host us, just to live in their home. And sometimes we were separated. Sometimes they would allow Malati and I to live, we'd live with one Indian family, and Mona would live somewhere in London with another family, separated, sometimes separated. So the Indian community began to help us. This is the first time, I think, in the Krishna consciousness movement, people came forward and began to help. Our first place stayed was called Hern Hill. We pronounced it Earn Ill. No fixed place to have meetings. So the Indian families began to invest to come and have their homes in different parts of London, occasionally two, maybe three times for the prasadam, because we had no money, we were always starving. So we'd go to the Indian homes and stuff ourselves with all this good stuff. And we were like yadav fat in those days, we were. So one by one, we were thinking, you know, we can't get out here in the suburbs with people. We need to go into the heart. Prabhupada wants us to approach the leaders and the English people. Into downtown London and situations. and gradually became friends with groups of flower children emerging in London. There was one area called Hill Gate, which sort of became the Tate of London. Met people there that began hippie giving us opportunities to in public places. It's called the Arts Lab. Young people, flower children began to gather and have different kinds of events. Started doing kirtans at the art basis. So this was, we arrived in September, or was it
late August.
Late August of 1908. So it's coming on, it's getting colder and colder. We knew we could place the people whose house we would stay in would gradually grow tired of us. We could feel it and move on. We were tiring of this nomadic, it's going into downtown London. I think one of us at least would go to downtown London and look for a space, look for an apartment, look for some opportunity so we could all live together and have kirtan in a public. Let's see. So by when did Betterton Street, by winter? Yeah, I'm probably going a little too fast. I'll stop in a minute. But the thing we started to get publicity, went to newspapers and they came to us and there were several articles. I thought he's got copies of some of the old art in the various newspapers as we're in London. So maybe I'm going a little fast. There's probably things that happened during those periods.
We talk about some of our advertising. I have a picture of the Sanfansotis and did a reverse negative so that if you're white, you look black, and if you're black, you look pink. Krishna consciousness, and we roof tops, we printed thousands of them and threw them off the roofs. So Krishna consciousness, I did of just proud eyes. One looked soft and one looked dark. Like jolly. A certain time we put businesses here, but we saved those because we made friends with this group of people in traditional times. It was the Arts Labor's lab. And so I had the Prahlad story, Gursunda and the paintings. I had photographed it. Two issues, a Prahlad story in the International Times. Then Muna made a Sanskrit script, because she covered Hare Krishna, Hare, and on the cover, and the regular got hold of us because we started chanting here and other places, and I actually got an infection in his fingers, so you could see a big bandage on his finger, but they were with us. They were our enthusiasm that this man wrote a glowing article about it, and the article was, they're thinking in front of the stock exchange and what that will do to the economy, Krishna knows. And so we sent it to...
Going back to our landing, as soon as I arrived, it was exchange of letters reached. This was the very end of August, somewhere... 27 and 30 exact date. It was written on Shri the Prabhupada informing all. And on September 9th, replied. So this, you know, the mail is very immediate. So I'll read a letter because it touches upon two of the topics that we have mentioned. One was our impending separation, and then the actual separation that we were experiencing just within a few hours, which to speak of a few days. And also it mentions about the help, or the probability of help from the Indians. When we first arrived, it was the day that Shamsundar and I arrived, it was Radhastami. And, the ladies had all been wearing saris. By this point, we'd all been wearing saris. The men were just a little slow to pick up on the dhoti movement. But we arrived, and I remember seeing a lady in a sari on the street. And I said, look, Shamsundar, there's an Indian lady, and she's wearing a sari. You know, I didn't know that there was, like, total boroughs full of Indians. We just didn't have any idea of the demography there at all. So we were just completely awed to see one person in a sari. Little did we know that, a week or two, we'd have big crowds of people in saris. So Srila Prabhupada wrote on September 9th, "My dear Shamsundar, please accept my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receipt of your letter dated September 2nd, 1968, and I'm very much glad to inform you that your letter has encouraged me so much. The letter was to Montreal, but I left Montreal on the 31st of August, 68, and I stayed in New York for 1 week. And then, just yesterday, 8th of September, 1968, I have come to San Francisco. I am staying in your apartment, the one above your former apartment. It is very nice, but on reaching San Francisco, I am feeling separation from all of you, namely Mukunda yourself, Guru Das, and Malati Janaki and Jamal. But I am proud that you have all gone to London to fulfill my mission. That is your first work. And so far as our feelings of separation, that is due to affection. But our main business is to expand the centers, and I am praying to Krishna to bless you all that you have very courageously taken this endeavor. Surely Krishna will make your endeavor successful." And then he mentions, "I am so much encouraged to learn that the Indians in London have promised to support. Long ago, one of my godbrothers, Ban Maharaj, went to London, deputed by my Guru Maharaj, but he could not do anything. Now, if we can establish a center in London with the cooperation of the Indians as well as the Englishmen, it will be a success for our activities. Please try to do it nicely. And as soon as you call me, I shall be glad to go to London. My present program is here, and then I shall stay in San Francisco up to the end of this month. And then I shall go to Seattle. And from Seattle, I shall be free, if you like. I can go directly to London, or I shall do as the time permits. But you must know that always ready to start for..."
This was September 1968, yeah. And yet it was to be another 1 year before Prabhupada came. Because we didn't want to bring Prabhupada to another front, to another suburb. We wanted to create a glorious atmosphere for Srila Prabhupada to come and be the king of England. But it only 1 year. When you look back, that's nothing. But
like
that year, 1 year for us was like to be separated from Srila Prabhupada like that for 1 year was the most extreme of austerities. And Prabhupada's almost every letter after this one, which was a week after we arrived, he would say, "I'm ready to come. I'm ready to come." Sometimes he would telephone if he knew our phone number and say, "When can I come? I'm ready now." And we kept saying, "No, Srila Prabhupada, just wait a little longer, please." We wanted to do it right.
We had that conference phone in the bibliophile office on the top floor of the...
Yes.
Betterton Street, and we all gathered around it and heard Prabhupada.
Conference calls with Prabhupada. In those days, conference was a brand new thing.
Well, we actually made a few calls because it was so pricey. So first we'd write a letter ascertaining the date and time that we would make the call.
Right.
You know, so it would be set up by advance that we are going to call you. And the first call we made was around... it was around Christmas time in 68. And we at that point in time, we already had a few little, you know, there was Kulishikar was there, I think, and maybe one other.
And Betterton Street we had
acquired.
You should tell about how we got Betterton Street.
Yeah, well, you're the guy that got Betterton Street. Who better to tell about Betterton Street?
We heard through the International Times, who were befriending us, especially one friend, Graham Keane, who was their photographer. He's still my friend to this day. He told us that they were moving from this warehouse where they kept their old archive copies of the underground newspaper. And the arts laboratory was on Drury Lane, adjacent this way. And on the other street was Endell Street, where they were moving, right down the street.
In the very heart of London, the very center of London.
Covent Garden. And it was much better than Earn Ill because you didn't have to ride in for that hour or so every day. We wanted something. We decided we should be in the center of London. And so we thought this was a good opportunity, and they told us that there was a gentleman by the name of Nigel Samuels. It might have been the Samuels jewelry family. He was independently wealthy. And so that if we asked him, he might let us see there. There was one floor available. And so we went to Portsmouth Square, where he lived, and there was a big, big penthouse, huge. You can see the big view of London, 360 degrees on the rooftop. And so Samarasundaram Mukunda said, Gurudas, you go and talk to him first. So I shook his hand, and we had a nice talk, and he was a very thin fellow, and reminded me of Oscar Wilde. And sure enough, after our meeting, he said that you could stay in this warehouse. It's 22 Betterton Street. But there's also my rare book finding office on the top called Bibliophile. There's also a branch of the Black Muslims there also.
Black Panthers. Black Muslims, right.
Black Muslims, yeah. Michael X.
Michael X.
No. No, I'm familiar with this because I used to hear Malcolm X speak in Harlem, New York. And this was the branch. There was someone named Michael X who was running this. And Samarasundaram says that I don't remember this, but he says that they had some of their belongings on the floor, and that I was able to. What did you? How did you word it?
They promised us that we would have two floors of this warehouse, but after they vacated, they didn't really vacate. They left many of their things piled on the floor. So again, Gurudas was put out to get Gurudas, why don't you persuade these people to get their stuff out of the apartment so we can move in? The Black Muslims were in those days a very militant group, and Michael X was always surrounded by four or five huge bodyguards. So Gurudas goes down on I'm watching from the window. He was down on the street with these bodyguards, and he walked right up to Michael X and said, "You have to get your stuff out of our place now." I thought these guys were going to kill him. They very meekly went upstairs and removed their belongings.
I said Jumbo first and gave him the special handshake.
Yeah, right. He was always very diplomatic about it. Strong.
Actually, later on, the police planted some counterbed in Michael X's apartment, and he came to me and said, "You're a photographer. Would you please photograph this?" Because it was like Little Jamaica, and there was like each room was full of babies and all the stuff that they moved out of the floor from Betterton Street. And by the photographs, it was proved that the police found this in 5 minutes. And he was let out of jail because of that. So we did remain friends.
Anyway, suddenly we had a place, a center, all where we could all live together and even have a space for having programs in the very, very heart of London. In fact, in those days, Covent Garden was the wholesale fruit and vegetable and flower market. It was open all night, so people could buy fresh fruits and flowers for their businesses, and then it closed in the morning and was closed all day. We had a warehouse, one of these old warehouses, flower and fruit warehouse, so there were no facilities. There was no plumbing. There was no heat. There were no furnishings.
The plumbing was there, but we didn't have a shower.
There was water in the building, but it wasn't set up for living. So we had to remodel, do whatever we could to live there, even though it was illegal to live there. We tapped into their water line, we needed a shower, so I built this kind of little shower down in the floor, which was also the garage. The car was the little red car was parked there, and the shower was next to it. And it was so cold. This is winter.
That's in between the shower and the car.
And Malati and the baby lived in a cardboard box between the shower and the car.
And down in the basement. Yeah,
big cardboard refrigerator box.
And then down in the basement, we weren't the only occupants in this building. In the basement, there was a hippie press.
Right.
And so that meant that they were always walking through the basement. So if you're taking a shower, or you were, you know, whatever you were doing down there, these people would be coming in and out at all hours, going down into the basement.
That's right.
To do whatever they were doing down in the basement.
It was so cold. It's winter now. There's no heating. And I can remember the garage door didn't quite close. It had a space of about an inch at the bottom. Coming down the stairs to see if Monty and the baby survived the night, seeing snow drifted in underneath that 1 inch and piled up on the floor in the room. So...
And got a letter from San Francisco. Is it that time yet?
Yes, it's about that time. Yeah, no, a phone call. We had one thing we always wanted that we established first was to get a telephone wherever we were so that we could keep in contact with people. And we got one day got a phone call, and it happened to be an old friend that I went to school with and who had become the manager of the Grateful Dead, which at that time was a famous rock and roll group. And he called from the airport in London in Heathrow and said, Sam, I've come over to England with some friends of ours, mutual friends from San Francisco, and we've come here to meet the Beatles. But we have no place to stay. Can you put us up? And I said, well, how many are there? He said, well, there's 10 or 12 of us. I said, yes, we can fit you in. Come on over. So I went out to the airport in my little red truck and picked up some of them and got the others into taxis. And here is this motley crew of people. It was some of the Grateful Dead members, which were a rock and roll group, Ken Kesey, the author and one of the foremost leaders of the psychedelic movement, Sonny Barger, president of the San Francisco chapter of the Hell's Angels.
And a notorious criminal.
And he had come with another Hell's Angel to start a London chapter of the Hell's Angels.
Which they never did because London was so small, and they drove those big bikes, and they just couldn't, like, get their bikes to go. You know, there was no room to speed, and they were used to driving very fast.
They brought their motorcycles
hogs
with them,
yeah.
Their choppers, their hogs. And they had flown AmeriCargo, these two huge motorcycles, I took one look at it, and I said, no, I can't put that in my little truck. So they made some other arrangements to get the come back and get the motorcycles. But anyway, here we all came to Betterton Street, this crew. And they wound up staying there only one night because we made them take their boots off.
They made me ask them to take their boots off.
Which wasn't very fragrant. Motorcyclists did it, but...
And they had weapons. The women had weapons.
They had their guns, and they had their women with them. So they were all... And it looked like a great opportunity to preach to us, so we kept them up all night preaching. We had kirtan. Gurdas was talking all night with Ken Kesey, and so the next day they left.
And Jamuna and Malati and Janaki cooked a wonderful feast, and so they after the feast, we had this cinema from the Boston Temple, and we were just waiting to inaugurate this. We hadn't seen it either, so we got a projector from the Arts Laboratory down the street. So after dinner, we showed this cinema. And it was some footage of Pod walking, I think, Satsvarupa and Jadarani. And to us, it was like, Prabhupada would look a little bit towards the camera and we'd go, oh, Prabhupada's looking towards us. Well, I look over at the Hell's Angels falling asleep. They fell asleep right on the floor. We could have divested them of their weapons like the Pandavas did. And Ken Kesey stayed up and he said, what do you need a guru for? The example of, well, if you needed some medical attention, would you want a doctor that was going to treat you by trial and error? Let's see, which side is the appendix on? I forget. Or would you want somebody who learned from somebody else and studied some books? And he said, yeah. And then he said, your guru's the heaviest, which was a compliment. And I said, well, that's very interesting, because one of the translations of guru is heavy. And he said, heavy. And he actually stayed in England, and I cooked for him, and they became vegetarians for a while. But the Hell's Angels woke up, and they didn't want to stay with us. It was too boring. And so they...
We were sleeping on the floor, and that we couldn't relate to that.
Yeah, they didn't care to sleep on the floor. And so they said, well, where should we go? And I remember Mukunda giving them like a detailed itinerary, how they could start a branch. First go to the arts laboratory, and then there's some squatters down the street from that. They'd be perfect, as Mukunda was advising them, like the Hell's Angels GBC. And then they took off with their hogs in this narrow street, Betterton Street, and it was like big roar. And then I saw all the lights go on, you know, everybody was looking out the windows.
Anyway, as a result of that, a few days later, this Rock Scully, the manager of Grateful Dead, telephoned again and just to chat, and said that happened to mention that that day they were going to go to the Apple Studios, which was the... No, he didn't.
Sorry.
That it was going to the... They went to the Apple Records Studios, and their plan was to have a meeting with the Beatles. And I asked Rock if I could tag along, and he said, well, why not? Just come. So that was the beginning. Through those people, we were able to get access to the... to the Apple Records studio and meet George.
But prior to that, we had tried to meet the Beatles by performing all types of little... We tried to get their attention. And we'd do things like make an apple pie and put Hare Krishna on the crest and send it in with a little, you know, with our phone number and address. And one other time we got this little toy apple with feet on it, and you'd wind it up and it would walk, and we put a little flag, Hare Krishna, and we put this little walking apple with a Hare Krishna flag on it. We set that loose in the office. We'd stand outside and chant Hare Krishna. We did whatever we could do to try to get the attention of the Beatles, you know, sort of like the kid crawling for the moon, hey, see me down here. And we weren't succeeding, actually, but then finally this occurred.
We actually spent a lot of time, like you just said, preparing for this. It wasn't although it wasn't our main purpose in being in London to meet the Beatles, we began to feel that by meeting them, if we could get them to chant Hare Krishna or talk Krishna publicly, that would spread Prabhupada's movement faster. Our purpose in being there was to spread Krishna consciousness, and at the rate we were going, it wasn't going to be very fast, because the people of London were just not accepting very readily. We had made three or four English converts by then, young English boys who came, and even a couple of them moved in with us. But that wasn't very fast enough. We wanted to get Prabhupada over there. And in order to get Prabhupada over there, we had to do something very big. I mean, don't forget, this is all because of Prabhupada. We just wanted Prabhupada to be with us. But we had to do something very big, or he wouldn't come. Or if he did come, he wouldn't be very happy. We wanted to make something enormous happen in London. So that's why we focused on approaching these famous men.
Krishna, sorry for interruption. Car number 0465, white Maruti 800 Deluxe, standing outside the building.
Another preparatory thing to meeting the Beatles, we tried to become friends with their friends. We thought by making friends with, Prabhupada always used the example that if you want to meet Henry Ford, who created the automobile, you have to start making friends with this janitor of his factory. So the very lowest people in the Apple organization, we began to approach them and give them prasadam and talk to them and become friends with them. A few of them were Americans, so we naturally gravitated toward the Americans like Chris O'Dell. And a few of the people who surrounded the Beatles became friends. So through us, or through them, they began to pass on the message of Krishna, we were hoping. And like Malati pointed out, the little gifts we sent over there, and little jokes.
And the International Times articles.
And the articles in the newspapers and all this were preparation for this one afternoon when I found myself actually standing in their offices in a large room full of other people. There were perhaps 100 people in the room, 50 to 100 people, all celebrities of various kinds and famous people from models and rock stars and poets and all kinds of people who were there to meet, also there to meet the Beatles, who were having a conference in another room adjacent to this room. It was told. It was allegedly the Beatles were in the other room having a business meeting. So we arrived, I arrived there maybe about something like that, maybe just afternoon. And as I walked up to the door to number 7 in Savile Row, or 8 Savile Row, 3 Savile Row, 3 Savile Row is the address, there was a Bobby standing there. And I started to walk in and he stopped me. You cannot come up. Because there were hundreds of girls in the street. This was a constant phenomenon that there were always hundreds, mostly girls, standing in the street in front of the office screaming for the Beatles. And so he stopped me from coming up, and I said, "Well, I'm with the other guys, the guys from California up there, the other Americans. I'm sorry, sir, I cannot come without a pass." So I was standing. Just then, a white Rolls Royce pulled up, and the driver chauffeur got out and opened the back door, and Yoko Ono stepped out the back seat, and she saw me standing there, and she said, "Oh, you must be one of George's. Come on." And she led me in through past the gate. So already George Harrison had become famous around the world for his openness to Eastern philosophy and religion. He had studied with the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi. He'd been to India. He was recording songs with philosophical content about India or directly from India. He introduced the sitar into some of the Beatles' music. So he was our obvious target who would be sympathetic to something about Krishna. So that's why Yoko said, "Oh, you must be one of George's." So waiting in that room upstairs with the others, there was no room by the time I arrived. So I found a little place in the far corner across from these doors, the three doors that were at one end where the Beatles were supposed to be meeting. I was at the opposite end in the far, far corner under the potted palm. And we waited all afternoon. I was at a loss for conversation with people after the first few minutes. I didn't have much to talk to these people about, so I just sat quietly chanting. And as the afternoon wore on, one by one, one of the Beatles would open the door and look out and see all these people and dash out. So first John dashed out, Paul dashed out, and Ringo dashed out. So everyone was very disappointed. Finally, George opened the door, and he started to close it and dash out. And then he saw me across the room, and he just opened the door and walked straight through all these people, not even looking at them, famous people of all sorts, and came over and sat down next to me and said, "Where have you been? I've been waiting to meet you." The first thing he talked about was Srila Prabhupada. He said he had received a copy somehow or other of that happening record, or the Hare Krishna mantra. But if you'll remember, Prabhupada gives about a 3-minute synopsis, or a concise summary of Krishna consciousness, one of the most beautiful crystal exposures of Krishna consciousness in short form. George had practically memorized that talk by Prabhupada. And it affected him so much that he just couldn't hardly wait to meet Prabhupada. And he first of all, he was so eager. He says, "Is your guru here? Is your spiritual master here?" And I said, "No, he's not here, but he'll come. He'll be coming soon." And so we sat down, and he immediately launched into philosophy. He wanted to know, who is Krishna? What is the difference between Krishna and all these other demigods and other forms of God that he'd heard about in India? And I quietly explained to him, as Prabhupada had explained to us, about that Krishna is the Supreme Personality, that your purpose in life is to develop a personal relationship with God, a loving relationship with the person. And it just hit George so hard that God was a person. He was so happy to hear that God was a person, and that he had personality characteristics that are the same as we have, that he became totally captured by the idea of Krishna in very few minutes. And when we kept going and going and going and going, talking in philosophy, only philosophy, and then a little bit, he wanted me to explain what my life had been like, and I told him, you know, that we were hippies in Haight-Ashbury. Oh, he liked that, the fact that we'd all experienced similar lives to his, you know, that we had used LSD, that we had done these things, same as him. So we became like very intimate friends and associates immediately. In fact, he even said at that time, you and I were together in a past life. I think we were brothers. I mean, that's how quickly George became Krishna conscious devotee. And he scribbled down, he saw finally all the people in the room had gathered around, and they were just listening to all this. This went on for a couple of hours, late into the evening. And finally he got up and saw all these people, and he said, "Well, I can see that we can't go on much longer." And he drew a little map of his house, where he lived out in the country near London, and requested that I come out and see him a couple of days later, I think it was. So that was the very first meeting with George.
Actually, he invited us for dinner.
Yeah, first I went out alone once, and I said, after, because he wanted to talk philosophy first and understand the philosophy first. Then he said, the first time, after the first meeting at his house, he said, "Can all of the devotees come out?" So then we came, we made a plan, and we all went out. Maybe you can remember that.
Came back the first day, and he said, and actually it was really late coming home, so there wasn't apprehension in terms of something negative, but, well, what had happened? You know, something must have happened, because he would have been home. So he was coming up the stairs, and he said, "I met the Beatles." We all just, well, you know, we knew something was going to happen. And then after this meeting, he went to that next meeting. He came back and he said, "We're all invited on Friday to George's home in Isherwood." And I remember how we all got on what we had considered our best clothes, and piled in this little toy car and went out there bringing mridanga kartals. And George had a beautiful harmonium, but it was on a stand, so you could sit and play it, and it was painted white with flowers on it, very of the times. And You know, devotees, we see everything as belonging to Krishna. So we may not know a person, but as soon as we get into their house, because it doesn't belong to those people, it belongs to Krishna, we see no problem with rearranging the furniture. So the first thing we did was like move all the furniture out of the way, and just so that we'd have a place to sit on the floor, because we didn't sit on furniture in those days. That was, you know, kind of an apparat in our hippie and newly forming Krishna conscious mind, that you didn't sit on furniture. So we got it all out of the way, and we're sitting down, and George was very eager and very immediate to join in the kirtans. And I think we also went out into the backyard at one point, and we're chanting. And I, was it from this meeting that he said we should make a record?
Yeah. We, one of the preparations we had done, along with, we sent them something every day, the apple and the articles, was we recorded a demo tape at the Arts Laboratory, arrangement that Mukunda arranged of the Brahma Samhita prayers, Govinda Madhi Purusham Tamaham Jami, and we sent that, but we found out that Peter Asher, their artist and repertoire person, put it in the rubbish bin. So one of the Hell's Angels' girlfriends became the girlfriend of Billy Preston. And Billy Preston was there also.
Frankie
became, she was great. And Billy Preston, there was like an organ there too. And so when we chanted, he played the organ as well.
And this was our first kirtan that George had been in with the devotees. So he chanted, I wish we had a recording of that. Somebody did make a, anyway. Whenever George got it, from that moment on, whenever we had kirtan with George, it was always something so special, because his music ability would enter into it, and Jamuna's music and Mukunda's great music ability would, it just made the kirtan so perfect that they would go on for an hour, 2 hours. In those days, we didn't have all these wonderful, beautiful, melodious versions of the mantra that they sing now. It was just the straight old Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, that melody, which is the original melody Prabhupada taught us. But the timing of it would go from very slow, to, and then take a long time to reach that fast crescendo, sometimes a half an hour, even 1 hour before everybody stopped, instead of all these changes of pace and so on.
Yeah.
So it built up a more contemplative mood, to where pretty soon you were out of your body just chanting this thing.
And Jamuna would yell, Hari Bol, and it would reach to Vaikuntha.
So George, at the end of this, he didn't want us to leave. And every he was just saying, oh God, now I see it works. It works. This mantra works. It feels so good. And Billy Preston, too, is all lit up. And he said, you know, we got to make a record. We got to make you guys rock and roll stars.
And we just happened to have the demo.
So he proposed at that first kirtan that in the near future we should make a record. And that came to pass. Okay, now time-wise, this is right around Christmas, New Year's of 68-69. So it was actually fairly fast, arriving at the end of August 68 and meeting George in December. That's only three and a half months. It seems like a year. But then we invited George to Betterton Street. And the next meeting with George then was when he came to Betterton Street.
Yeah.
Maybe you can remember that better, Malati, because you were cooking and all that.
That's why I don't remember it better. I was cooking.
But George came into our humble home then and saw how we lived so simply and so focused around Krishna. He had never met a group of plain monks before. Everyone else he had met in the ashrams of India or the yogis of India were surrounded by all of their opulent entourages and their Rolls Royces and this and that. But he'd never met you know, monks or devotees of Krishna who only thought about their spiritual master and nothing else, with very little material things in their lives. And he really liked that. The basic relationship we had with George is that we never asked him for anything. We never asked him for anything. All these other groups would approach him and immediately ask him, oh, can you give us some money? Can you give us this? Give us that? So he was afraid of approaching or being approached by these emerging yogi groups that were coming out. But he recognized in us something completely different from all of that, something, the real thing. He saw the real thing here. He saw our sacrifice and our love for our spiritual master.
And he loved prasadam, too.
And the prasadam, he loved it.
He said it got him intoxicated.
This was the singing, of course, because he was a musician. Part of our discipline is music. And this captured him. And not only the music, but the music transformed him physically, is what got him.
Yeah.
I feel so good, he kept saying all the time whenever he was singing.
And he and John listened to the happening record a lot, they said.
So George became more and more attracted. He came to Betterton Street. He left very happy. And then one day he called up and said, I've got we're recording an album. The Beatles are recording, I think it was the White Album. It was the one they did, or the Abbey Road album. One of those albums they recorded in Abbey Road Studios.
Yeah.
And that he had booked some time before their session for us to record our record. I think this was about March, wasn't it, or April of 1969? I think March.
I'm not good with dates.
March or April of 1969. And he said, oh, you've got to come. Are you ready? No, we'll be there in an hour. So without any preparation, we just threw our instruments into the little red truck and went down to the studio.
I remember we brought prasadam, and we weren't so eloquent about the way we would transport prasadam, so we just had these pots, you know, like real vagabonds. It wasn't like nicely packaged, we were just like bringing these pots. So we come into this studio, and everybody was, you know, I mean, they were like the high end of the hippie life people, so, you know, they were dressed in their fashion, and we came in with our robes and our capes and our pots, you know. But they were really curious to know what was in those pots, you know. I remember Jumita told them they would have to wait to find out, but it would be worth waiting for.
And when was it that Ravi Shankar was there at the did he come around that time? We all went in the
I don't.
At one point, because everything was building, and I was starting to send some these articles back and some photos, and in a minute I'll read this letter that Prabhupada wrote to show the mood. But sometime Ravi Shankar came, and we knew him from San Francisco. And we heard he was going to the High Commissioner's house in Kensington. Oh. And his name was S.S. Dewan. And he was actually a devout communist. But I remember there was a man in livery in the special costume. And he was announcing, Lord and Lady such and such. And then we put in our little chit that said, International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he announced us. And then Ravi Shankar was there. And he immediately went up to us and welcomed us and was very happy to see us.
But going back, Gurdas, remember that the ambassador's compounds were all inside of a locked gate.
Right.
With guard.
Right.
All the embassy of India, the embassy of this country and that country were all in this very highly secure zone.
Right.
And we pulled up. We were going to crash the party. We heard that Ravi Shankar was going to be at the commissioner's house, but we had no invitation.
Right.
So we came up to the gate, and the Bobby came out
Yes. So, Gurdas, get us in here. So, Gurdas, this overcoat over his dhoti, and says, "We're from the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We have an appointment with the ambassador, and we're late." "Right away, sir." He opens the gate, and Henry goes.
Well, this man, even though he was a communist, invited us upstairs immediately, and we had our articles and our photographs, and he liked us so much he invited us to lunch a few days after. I'll jump ahead because it's an interesting story. He became the High Commissioner of Calcutta. Well, even though he was a communist, he loved the kirtan. And so he lived in a house that Gandhi visited, and it is the High Commissioner's Palace. And by this time, there are a lot of devotees in Calcutta. And so we all went there, and he welcomed us. And there was one daughter of a very, very high society person from Calcutta with us. And she was coming around. She was very pleasant. And there was also, we were trying to meet a Mr. Mukherjee, who was, I think, the finance minister of Bengal. And so he happened to be in the audience. And we said, okay, let's have a rousing kirtan because, you know, we're here. And they built a stage for us. And we had such a rousing kirtan. And I looked around and I saw that the society girl was missing. She had fallen off the stage, under the stage. She hurt her leg. She was under the stage. Meanwhile, this Mr. Mukherjee, the finance minister, Bengal, was a devotee, and he was wanting to meet us, and he jumped up and had a heart attack. So two ambulances arrived at that kirtan.
I remember walking into the High Commissioner's Palace there in London, and all these people were lords and ladies in their ball gowns, and it was right after the Larvae concert in Royal Albert Hall.
That's
about where they were meeting over there. So everyone was in full dress, all the lords and ladies of England, and that butler announcing us, "International Society for Krishna Consciousness." And everybody, all heads in the room, turned around. Here's these six bedraggled devotees.
So the alchemical wedding had already happened then?
No, that was much later. This was the Ravi Shankar concert.
Right. Yeah. Oh, that one.
Yeah. So we did this thing often, crashing parties, and we did whatever we felt like doing because we knew we were empowered by Lord Krishna and that there would be no obstacle. We even dared Krishna to try to get us out of this mess. And the whole thing was floating along in us with a great sense of humor at the same time, because we were always joking about our successes and failures, people we met, things we did. And it almost became like a competition to see who could do the farthest out thing to get the people of England to listen to us. All this time, of course, we still have nothing. We have no temple or anything like that. And I had, before we left California, in anticipation of this glorious temple we were going to build in London, I had bought all this beautiful wood. I was a carpenter, and they have a special kind of wood in California called redwood.
Visionary.
So I bought a whole pallet, a big pallet of this redwood, and had it shipped by a ship to London. And we picked it up at the docks, and we stored it in different places around London, waiting to build a temple with it. So somewhere that wood was still stored.
Right.
But you want to go back to the recording session? We're still in the. We haven't done the recordings.
What about the alchemical wedding?
Oh, that was much later. That was at John Lennon's house.
That was
at John Lennon's house. much later.
I just like to make a small comment because although there was unlimited adventures, and certainly we were enthusiastic in our desire to carry out this mission, it wasn't without any great struggle. And at one point, I had actually, and this was one point, was quite soon after, this was by November, I had written to Srila Prabhupada one letter, and I will read his reply. He said, "Please accept my blessings. I thank you very much for your nice letter of November 15th, 1968. So November 15th is just a little bit, not quite 3 months after we're there. He said, "And I have noted the contents with great satisfaction. Your humble sentiments are very nicely expressed herein, and your sincere desire to serve the Lord is the real perfection of life. You have asked if I found it difficult to carry on devotional service when in my household life, and yes, I did. In my household life, I was strictly following the regulative principles, but my wife was reluctant to assist me properly. Therefore, I was obliged to give up their company. You try to take care of Lord Jagannath as far as possible after doing your household duties, but you should be strict only in completing the 16 rounds of chanting. That will save you from all discrepancies. As a householder, even there is some flaws in following the rules and regulations, it doesn't matter. You should try your best, and with Krishna's help, Krishna will help you. If you keep your heart in that attitude, then you want to become a pure and sincere devotee. You must be a sincere devotee." And he says it for the third time, "And Krishna will help you. You have to keep your heart in that way. That is your business. I hope you are well with your child." So he was sympathetic to the struggle. And I had asked him, frankly, you know, what was it like for you? And he had answered me very honestly. But along with his honest answer was an honest push on how to maintain the proper mood, the proper attitude with regards to being a grihastha. And of course, we were grihastras for sure, but we were not living, you might say, a typical grihastha lifestyle. At the same time, he gave the proper method for managing, no matter what your style was. And that, he said, was to strictly chant these 16 rounds, no matter what else. And to me personally, he said, to worship Lord Jagannath. Because the original little deities of Lord Jagannath, which I had originally found, they had come with us to London. So they were there. Lord Jagannath was in London in his miniature form.
Yeah, we left off entering the front gates of Abbey Road studio, and all of the thousands of teenage girls in front screaming and yelling, they let us through. We went into the studio, which was quite a large room. None of us had ever done this before, so we didn't know what to expect. And Paul McCartney was there. Because they were waiting to make a session for the Beatles album later in the evening, so he was there early, and he did the mixing of the controls. And of course, we had met and decided to do the Hare Krishna mantra. It was going to be the record that we made, but we had never prepared. I remember George and Mukunda sitting down at a piano. Mukunda sat at the piano, and we worked out a melody and a basic structure for the 3 minutes. George told us we had 3 minutes and 30 seconds